Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Not Another True Crime Podcast. Just me, Sarah Levine, today, and Danny.
Yes, I know. Unfortunately, no pop stars are ringing in to hang with us. But who knows? Maybe one will call in midway through. Probably not. But
it's true.
Meghan Trainor has been popping up in a lot of places. I don't know if she'll pop up here. I don't know if we want that, but...
We got to get Hillary Duff. And also, can we get JoJo back?
Wait. She's in New York.
Did you interview her?
Yes. And she's in New York for Broadway now, so...
Oh, you're right.
There's something... I feel like that is a very hard schedule to work things around, but there's something there. I'm literally writing that down.
We're constantly planning and scheming on this podcast. You're getting it in real time, everybody. And where else can you say that happens?
Exactly. And also because it is Not Another True Crime Podcast, like, we hear so many things about schemes and scams, and we're like, how can we do that without getting arrested? And...
Exactly.
Getting a pop star on the pod is a perfect, harmless... Win for all. That's a kind of a scam because they're probably like, wait, what? It's just a scam to them.
It's like a prank. It's a prank, I feel like. The prank is that this is legit. But it would be fun. So I'll put that out into the universe.
Yeah, I'm into that.
Can make it happen. As far as the true crime universe, I mean, we are behind, but the Murdaugh verdict came out in like 30 seconds, basically. That was wild.
Truly, the turnaround for that was not even turnaround. It was just, here we are. And I don't think anybody was really that surprised with how that happened. I was surprised at how quickly they came to the decision, but...
Me too. Me too. I was like about to just like sign off of work. And then I was like, oh, never mind. We're back on lawncrime.com.
They really, I really do go to them a lot for a lot of like popping content and stuff.
It's true. They had a, I feel like, a glow up sort of. They kind of came out of nowhere. And then they were like all over the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp trial. They're all over the Murdaugh trial. And now I'm like, okay, I see you guys.
We'll keep thinking about it. So we have them and also the Smithsonian Magazine as our true norths. Because isn't our episode today, there's some Smithsonian Magazine at the bottom of it.
There's a little bit, yeah. We also, CNN, Guardian. I mean, this is like a really well-known case, so there's no lack of coverage, truly all over the place. But today we're going to be taking it down under again, folks. That's right.
We go down under a good amount.
We sure do. And we're going to be talking about a very famous unsolved mystery that now actually might be solved.
Okay.
So, you know, there were a couple people who DM'd us at Not Another True Crime Go Follow, by the way. They were like, can you please do something that's been solved? I need the closure. And I totally get that.
That is real. You know what? That's actually, we've been messing up from a therapeutical standpoint. Even though I do always...
Because there's no closure.
There's no closure. So we're here to help some people with closure. Even though, not for crimes, I always say closure is an internal, not an external feeling. So that's, if anybody's going through anything, that's what I say in terms of closure. But in terms of crimes, we can get you some closure.
I do love that for you. There's some closure. It's like half closure. Like the door is like ajar.
Ooh, yeah, it's a jar Skippy.
Yes, like we know a jar of Skippy, yes. We know like some things, but not other things. So we're going to be talking about a quick little thing,
and I know I apologize that I'm going to get I'm the reason now we'll get a one star rating for not getting to the point of the episode, but it's worth it because I have a question. Iced coffee without ice.
Oh yeah, okay, we'll talk about this
because you put it on the Instagram. Is this a super secret serial killer trait? And if you guys remember, we love hearing your SSKTs, super secret serial killer traits. I don't know if I said all the S's right, but where it's just something you do that you're like, is this normal? Is this weird? Should people like run away from me? Sarah's is, it's giving me pause. It's giving me pause. It's giving me concern.
Okay. I understand this is a very polarizing choice. And here's an even more polarizing choice is that I am like a hot coffee person. Like pretty much, I mean, not when it's like 90 degrees outside. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not like completely insane, but most of the time, I'll go for a hot coffee. But for some reason, the other day, it wasn't even super warm out. It just was really sunny. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't feeling the hot coffee vibes. So I wanted, but I didn't want an iced coffee because the problem is like, so I take my coffee up to Columbia and that's like a 40-minute train journey.
Oh.
And so I didn't want iced coffee because like my hands would be all wet, my hands would be frozen and like nobody wants that. And then also like the coffee gets watery by the time I would actually get up there to drink it. And I gotta be honest, like I love Dunkin', you know, we're a Dunkin' house. We're a Dunkin' family on this podcast.
Hugs to every Dunkin' out there right now.
Yes, but I will say, like, I don't really trust their cold brew. Like,
I never get cold brew there.
I feel like they're good for the coffee. Like, one time I had a cappuccino, and ooh, I was like, how does this taste horrible? Like, what's gone wrong? Okay. So I don't trust them for the cold brew.
I know. I only get iced coffee there because I'm like, I don't want – it's a basic – when I go to Dunkin', I'm like, I'm in the 90s. Cold brew doesn't exist yet. Iced coffee is new and inventive, and that's, like, what I crave. Wait, so you don't drink – you keep the coffee for 40 minutes in your hands, and you don't finish it?
No, because it's like I'm on the subway. Like, I don't know. I'm still wearing a mask. And also just, I don't know. I can't like multitask. I can't sip and read and I'm holding too many things.
That's
in the subway.
Real.
It's
okay.
Like too much going on.
Okay, I was
going
to say, I give you a lot of credit for your restraint because I feel like I get a coffee and I'm like, it's gone. Yeah.
Oh my God. And then you get the caramel swirl and I'm like, ooh, it's so good.
Okay, now that sounds really delicious.
It is delicious. But so anyway, so I didn't want to deal with this like wet, cold. I just didn't want to deal with it. So I got iced coffee, but I asked for no ice. And I know you can get light ice. And I was like, I don't want the problem to a lesser degree. I want zero problem.
Yes. Okay.
So what comes out, it's kind of like, it's cold. They also did give me ice anyway, so I was annoyed. So then I scooped it. So then I got the best of the ice, but none of the like mess.
Okay.
And it wasn't as cold as a true iced coffee, but it like did the job, I feel
like. You know what?
And you get more coffee.
Well, that's the thing, because I feel like the ice, sometimes you get like three sips and it's kind of like the center of the Tootsie Roll pop and you're like, wait, where's my coffee now? Because
exactly.
They have it. So, okay. All right, you justified it. I'm not going to do it. I'll sometimes do light ice, but I'm not going to. I need to hear the ice cubes rattling. That's like very calming.
Music to my ears.
Yes, yes, yes.
I will say if I get a Starbucks iced coffee for some sad reason, I have to get ice in it because their coffee is just like gross and I need the ice
really,
to melt
it's
in
always
there
just
and
like a burn
dilute
energy.
It.
Yeah.
But that's my coffee story. I don't even know if I'd recommend it, honestly. Like I'm not out here saying like you guys should all do this. Like I don't even think so. I know it's weird.
She's like,
but
this is just my life. Don't you forget the No Doubt cover song.
Exactly. Yeah. Who is that? It's My Life. Whatever.
No Doubt.
I remember that song. Oh, yeah, yeah, thank you.
Oh, yeah, and they like, I think it's a cover, but oh, that No Doubt version is so good.
Yes. So now we've covered the mystery of the iced coffee. We're going to take it to Australia where they also probably drink ice. Actually, I feel like iced coffee is an American thing.
It was not a European thing, so I don't know if it's made its way to Australia or not. Yeah.
You ask for iced coffee and they're like, what?
They're like, no, who?
Yeah. So this unsolved mystery is called the Somerton Man, and you guys have probably heard of it because it's just extremely well known.
Mm-hmm.
But the setting is Somerton Beach, which is a beach outside Adelaide, Australia. So on November 30th, 1948, I mean, we're just kind of jumping right into the setting here.
Boom.
Like there's really no preamble.
No. Our preamble was iced coffee, and now here we are. We're right in the middle of it. Yeah.
Now here we are, yes. So basically, We're on the beach. And what do you do on the beach? You walk along the beach. So
so far, so good.
And you do other things, but that's not important. So on November 30th, 1948, two couples, I think this was in the evening, noticed a smartly dressed man who was lying on the sand with his head propped up against a wall. Oh. And the first couple to notice this guy was a man named John Lyons and his wife, and this was around 7 o'clock. And they said they saw the man's arm move up and down and just kind of figured he was like drunkenly trying to smoke a cigarette, as you do.
Honestly, like, okay, beach vibes, who knows?
Sure. I mean, it's kind of weird to wear a suit to the beach, like, you know, Lauren Conrad, homeboy wore combat boots to the beach.
That's actually true. And Lauren Conrad, fashion icon, beach goer extraordinaire. So she knows.
She knows. And then the other couple also, they just kind of thought he was some drunk guy taking a nap. So everybody's like, meh.
Yeah. All right, he's chilling.
Yeah. Until the next morning, police got reports of a dead body. Mm-hmm. So they investigate and they find this man on the beach. He's 5'11", 40 or 50 years old. And this is where it gets weird because he didn't have any ID on him. And all the tags on his clothing had been cut out.
That is such a bizarre, specific thing to have happened. Because it's like, what does the clothing tags have to do with anything?
It's weird. And so in his pockets, he had cigarettes, matches, Juicy Fruit gum, which I'm like, I didn't even know Juicy Fruit existed back in 1948.
I didn't either.
Yeah. So he had Juicy Fruit, an unused bus and train ticket, and also two hair combs. Gotta have a backup, I guess.
That's real.
And they also noticed that one of his pants pockets was like sewed with orange thread. I think it had been repaired or something. Maybe there was a hole in it. They put the time of death no later than 2 a.m. And they first kind of chalked it up to maybe a suspected heart attack. But then later they started looking into it and they thought maybe it was poison. A pathologist found a lot of blood in his stomach.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing where it's like, oh, maybe like, you know, heart failure or something like that. Everyone's all quiet. Or poison. Like, because that's just such a
maybe heart attack,
level.
Maybe poison. Yeah. Tomato, tomato. But the weird thing was that they like obviously looked in his stomach and the last thing he ate was a pasty, which didn't have poison in it. So they were like, but then how did he get poisoned? And nobody could figure out this man's cause of death, but experts agreed it was not natural.
Mm.
And also, nobody was able to even figure out who this guy was because he had no ID.
Just Juicy Fruit.
Just Juicy Fruit.
Which was founded in like 1893, which is insane.
Wow. Good to know. So the Australian authorities even contacted J. Edgar Hoover, who was like the head of the CIA at the time. If you remember that movie with like Matt Damon, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Not actual history, just the movie.
They're like, no, we got fives in AP US history. Okay.
Yeah. And they weren't able to find a match for his fingerprints. And then it gets even weirder because a month after his death, police found what they thought was the man's suitcase at the Adelaide Railway Station, which like is definitely weird because if you remember, he had a train ticket he didn't use.
Yeah. Hmm.
So they were able to actually match a spool of thread in the suitcase that was like the same orange color that was used to repair his pants.
That's impressive. Okay.
And they also found a shaving brush, shoe polish, a knife, scissors, a screwdriver. What?
You never know what you need.
Like, la, 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 la. Yeah, and right? Then screwdriver.
Like, yeah, just gonna Juicy Fruit and screwdriver. Maybe it's like, that's almost like when you have to, like, make a credit card minimum when you're like, fuck, I need, like, $3 more. Like, what can I get? Like, he just wanted a screwdriver. He's like, I guess some Juicy Fruit. Yeah.
I did that the other day. I'm so stupid. So I'm, like, leaving on a trip for, like, a week and a half. And I needed to hit the minimum at the grocery store. So I was like, let me just buy eggs. What?
No. Okay.
Why did I do that?
Also, that's like you hit the eggs now is the maximum of the grocery store.
Seriously. I'm like, why didn't I just buy 2 packs of gum? I don't know. My brain like fucking short circuited. And I was like, eggs, I guess.
Legs.
So fucking stupid. Okay. So if anybody needs eggs, like I'm running a black market on eggs.
Or you're just like on your flight. Yeah.
My roommate doesn't even like eggs. So I'm like, shit. Wait, speaking of eggs, I'm sorry to go on this tangent, but like, do you remember the last day of the Murdaugh trial that juror got dismissed?
Oh, yeah. Because
she was talking about the case with people that she wasn't supposed to. And there was this hilarious video. I love that judge. The judge was like, all right, ma'am, like, you know, we have to kick you out. Is there anything you need to get? And she goes, my purse and a dozen eggs. And everyone's like, what? And she's like, yeah, I brought a dozen eggs for the jury. And I'm like I still have questions. Like were they hard-boiled? Like,
soft-boiled? Are they just like
were they raw? Like,
memorabilia?
Are they in the carton?
Yeah. Does she have a farm?
I don't know.
That's a question.
Like, why are you bringing eggs
I mean,
to, like, the jury deliberation room?
I mean, she's a talker, as we know, so she'll probably let us know.
Yeah, I do want to know. Ma'am, if you're listening to this, please answer us about the eggs.
Eggs and only the eggs.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/betches.
Speaking of like everything in the kitchen sink. Okay, so here's what else was in this guy's suitcase. They found a stencil kit that was kind of like army issue. It was responsible for stenciling cargo. So I'm like, this sounds like a pretty big stencil kit, like a pretty hefty
giant
one.
Cargo. Yeah. Yeah.
And they also found some clothing that had the name T. Keane on it, K-E-A-N-E, and some, like, variations of that, too.
I know. I wanted to read it like T. Keane, like T. Payne, but I know it's Keane.
Oh, man. That would have been sick. And then they brought it to a tailor who said the clothing was made in the U.S., so they thought maybe this guy's American. Police really had no leads. Before they buried the body, they made a plaster death mask, which sounds really scary.
It sounds objectively terrifying.
But it's like not. I mean, yeah, a death mask to me, I'm imagining those like doctors in Venice with like the beak mask thing.
Wait, yeah, that's what I was picturing with like sewn things and stuff.
Yeah, it's not that. It's just a cast. Okay. So basically they made this because they wanted to obviously buried the man and also needed to be able to like try to identify him later on. I mean, they took pictures too, but you know, it ended up being good that they did this extra step because then some DNA got trapped in the mask.
And I didn't know that this was a practice, really. Like death masks.
I mean, yeah, it's never come up.
Yeah, so it's really interesting.
In my family funerals.
Weirdly, the Irish wakes I've gone to are not incorporating death masks.
But maybe they should.
Honestly. Or just closed caskets. Like closed caskets, closed captions.
No. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why y'all do that.
It's I don't either.
Haunting.
I don't either. It's weird. It's very weird.
It's definitely not a Jewish thing. We do not do the, like, a viewing.
That's fair. I don't know what we're... It's an interesting concept. Yeah, but so like Sarah said, they were able to use this death mask for things down the line. And they had a first real break that came through in May 1949, when a pathologist named John Cleland re-examined the body, and found a small rolled up piece of paper in the man's pants pocket. So he's got one hand in his pocket, like a Lannis, but no one else had any hand in any pocket because this didn't come up somehow at any of the first times looking. But like they're like, how did you miss this? Maybe it was like it could have been like a secret pocket they're kind of thinking even. Like
I kind of think that's what it was because at first I was like, how did you not find this?
Well, also because
I think it was some kind of secret thing.
Like in sketched in, or like sewn in specifically because they had all the sewing stuff and screwdrivers and juicy fruit.
And the screwdrivers.
A lot of variables. And maybe it was just the piece of paper he uses to like spit out his juicy fruit at restaurants. No. It actually had a phrase, Tamam Shud, and this is Persian for it's finished or it ended.
Spooky.
Spooky, very spooky writing to find in a secret pocket of a dead man.
Definitely spooky. This is kind of why, I feel like this is why this case kind of took off, because, I mean, number one, nobody knew who this guy was. It seems like he went to great lengths to try to conceal his identity.
Anonymity, yeah.
And then you have this phrase that happens to mean, like, it ended. So it's definitely spooky.
And the phrase was traced to a 12th century book of Persian poetry. Do not totally know how to pronounce the Persian poetry book, but you guys can...
I'm going
to
go with the Rubaiyat, but
oh, the Rubaiyat, yeah. Oh, yeah, the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. And it was popularized by an 1859 English translation. In July, a man produced a copy of the Rubaiyat that he said was tossed in the back of his car around the time of the Somerton's man's death. That's getting weird.
It's like reverse carjacking. Like, wait, people are putting stuff in your car.
Could you imagine? I'm like, someone in Queens is like, why do I have 12 eggs in my car? It's
yeah. I'm like, please just take it off my hands. I'm
taking my eggs.
My neighbors.
Taking my eggs. And they noticed that the tear in the book matched the tear on the page he had in his pocket. So this is weird. So that
definitely.
Book clearly was somehow connected to him, quite literally. The man said that he went for a drive with his BIL in a car.
Sorry, brother-in-law. Oh, I was too like, late. I read too much Reddit.
Bill. I'm like.
You don't know the BIL?
The way I'm like, what is that code for? Don't tell his wife he's with the bill. Okay.
It's code on code.
All right. So he was driving with his brother-in-law. That's an interesting dynamic, but I guess families.
It's like stepbrothers. They're buds. I don't know.
That's true. And they kept by the Somerton Beach. The brother-in-law found the book in the car, but he assumed it belonged to, like, they both were like, oh, no, that's your 12th century book of Persian poetry, right?
Yes.
Like, they weren't thinking anything of it. They're like, oh, he's reading. Like,
yeah. It's like the Spider-Man meme where they're just, like, pointing at each other.
It's like, wait, you love Omar's writing as well? No. I don't know this man. Do you? No. There were also annotations in the book.
Interesting.
So highlighter, juicy fruits and highlighters, strings of letters, which some believed were code. And the number, this is also where it gets weird. The number for a nurse named Jessie Jo Thompson.
Yes. Interesting.
Thompson lived close to the beach where the Somerton man was found. She told detectives she'd given the book to Alfred Boxall, a man she'd met during the war. So now some things are okay. So they went to pay Boxall a visit, and it turned out he was very much alive. Because I, in that moment, sorry, I don't know, up to that point for you, I was like, oh, that was Alfred.
Yeah. No, same. You're like, okay, case closed, bring in the dancing lobsters.
Oh, we're good. Oh, thank you, Jessie Jo Thompson, no relation to Emma Thompson. Turns out, you know, Boxall is very much alive, and he still had the book Thompson gave her.
How popular was this poetry? I'm like, this is spooky.
I need to read this. I know. I need to. Yeah. So they hit her up, and she was like, I don't know this man.
Sorry to this man.
Who are you? Except she also seemed like she was going to faint when she was shown the death mask. So what is going on? So she was like, who's this Alfred, but had a visceral reaction to the death mask.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she said she never met the guy, but the Somerton man, but she also, like, almost passed out when she was shown basically what he looks like. So that's odd.
Very odd visceral reaction. She also recalled a time where a random man called for her at her home at night. Huh? I'm like, in what capacity did he call for what?
I feel like, you know, when like you're Stella! Like, it's in the 1800s and you're in like a huge Victorian house and you have like a gentleman caller, you know what I mean?
I know, I'm really picturing.
They're like calling around.
I'm picturing the Power of Love music video because I think that's where Celine Dion is like with a ghost in a giant house.
There we go.
And authorities are kind of just like took all of this information, the Celine Dion of it all, the fainting of the death mask, and were like, okay, so good to meet you. Like, they didn't press her.
like for unknown reasons. I'm still just like, what?
Very confused.
They're probably just like, oh, you know, women just fainting all the time. Like, I don't.
Like, we
don't want to agitate her. I'm like, oh.
They're like, you know, this working nurse saw a death mask and probably just thought, oh, death. Or it's like, no, she is a nurse. Like, she deals with, like, things every day.
I mean, it's also, like, it's a plaster cast. I don't think the sight in and of itself is, like, particularly frightening, you know?
No.
So weird. I don't get what that's about. So this was fairly recently possibly solved, but that would be no fun if we just ended it here. So first we're going to talk about what people thought happened because
the word on the street.
The word on the street is, yes, exactly. Because this was unsolved for like 70 years. Wow. So at first they were looking into poisons that were deadly, but also would like had a short half-life because they didn't find any poison like in the man's body. And there were only two poisons that fit this description, digitalis and strophanthin.
For sure.
Which are not easy to pronounce, but also, more importantly, they're not easy to find and they're not common. Mm. I mean, they're muscle relaxers, apparently, that at least back then were used to treat heart disease. Okay. But they weren't available over the counter. Like, you had to get a prescription. So, I don't know. Who's going to, who's going to fake a heart disease to get a prescription to poison someone? It's a lot.
It's a lot of steps. A lot.
It's a lot of steps. They also thought like maybe it could have been a suicide, but again, like who would die by suicide using obscure poisons?
In public, yeah, at the beach.
Weird. They also noticed that this is so funny to me. Like they noticed that this guy's legs were like jacked. Like he had some really jacked calves, and they thought that he either was accustomed to wearing high heels or maybe he was a ballet dancer.
Shout out.
Yeah. I do think that every time I wear heels, I'm like, wow, this is a full leg workout.
I could only imagine.
Yeah. I don't know how like drag queens will like do that and like dancing and jumping in heels.
Oh, and I'm do
like,
flips?
I could barely put one foot in front of the other. But it definitely, your calves will get jacked that way. So if you do need to get some better calves, just like go to DSW. I don't know. So another weird thing that, again, is just kind of unexplainable and bizarre. But another man in Australia, also not that long after the Somerton man, died with a copy of the Rubaiyat in his possession. So I'm like, is this book just like Eat, Pray, Love or like 50 Shades? Like, does everybody just have this book? It's Harry Potter, or is this truly a weird coincidence?
That is, yeah, I'm wondering, like, is this, because it's like, there was no like Oprah book club, you know what I mean? Where everyone's like, we got to read this.
No, but who knows? What's even weirder is they both had an edition of the book that was never actually printed. So this other Australian man who died had like the seventh edition of this book. But they looked into it and the actual book was never printed past the fifth edition.
Do, 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 do.
Yes, I was waiting for that. So, like, because of this and because of these, like, string of letters that they thought was a code, they were like, maybe the Somerton man is a Russian spy. It was the Cold War was happening back then.
The theories on this man, okay, so he's either a ballerina or a spy, which could like, be a combo.
Get you a man who could do both.
That's actually true. And, like, that means, like when you sneak around, you're so good at, like, sneaking. Yeah.
Exactly. I feel like I remember hearing that they will, like, have football players learn ballet so that they can be nimble.
Yes, as they should.
So I'm like, maybe, you know, I feel like Russia, they have good spies, also good ballet dancers.
That's, wait.
Good vodka too, so.
And yeah, and now I'm just thinking of Petrovsky from Sex and the City. He was an artist, and I think they went to the ballet one, so.
See? But the only thing with that is like code experts said that basically what they found wasn't actually a code. It was just like a string of letters. And they said maybe they were just the first letters of horses he was betting on.
Mm.
And then in 1959, a witness statement that was previously kind of ignored got brought back to the surface again. A man claimed to see one man carrying another man on his shoulder the night the Somerton man was found.
You think that was a big, like, oh.
I think everybody just thought this was like, because this guy just assumed it was one guy carrying his drunk friend, and everybody just thought it was a drunk person. And honestly, as someone in New York City, like, I would never look twice
that's true.
At like any of this stuff.
Yeah, I'd just be like, oh, that's a good, I'd be like, call an Uber.
Yeah. I remember there was like a flight, I think. A flight? Was it a flight? I think it was a flight where someone, they just assumed some like old person had fallen asleep, but they actually had died.
No. You were on it?
No.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Absolutely not. I feel like it was a flight, but I remember seeing something like this in the news. But yeah, I just feel like if you saw some guy like slumped over, you'd be like, eh.
That's true. And also, yeah, that's the thing. I'm like, I'm not looking around to ask questions about things about serious things. Like if it's like, how was your day? That's a more fun thing. Not like, oh, what's going on over there? Because then also if you're like the person's like, oh, you just woke up this sleeping person for no reason.
Exactly. I don't want to have my like SVU intro moment. Like I do not need to be stumbling upon any deceased people.
Nope. 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 It's why I take melatonin and go to sleep early. I'm like, I don't need to go. I don't need a night walk. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm not jogging in the park.
Not.
I'm not going near any like unidentified masses like over in the brush. No.
No, thank you.
I don't have a dog.
So now we're getting into some names, some phrases that pays. Derek Abbott. Abbott is a professor at the University of Adelaide who got like very into this case in 1995.
He's like the OG body moving.
Wait, yes, Abbott moving. And he teamed up with an American genealogist to solve it. A little bit more successful because I feel the last time we uncovered a case, I think also in Adelaide, the kids where they were like, oh, we're bringing in a psychic. A genealogist, I feel, has a little more merit.
A psychic, yeah. A genealogist, a little more like above board.
And any psychics listening via the podcast or through other channels of them, I believe in psychics, just quality ones.
Other channels.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to mess with any psychics. So I love
that
stuff.
They're not listening to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. They have their
own way. Yeah. He decided to revisit the matter of Jo Thompson after her death in 2007. The nurse.
I wish he'd done it earlier because it's like,
I know.
You know, there's just so many unanswered questions and it's like so frustrating.
And also, it's like he got into the case in 95, revisits her in 07. What were we doing for 12 years?
Exactly. Come on, man.
He thought maybe the man was the father of her son, Robin. They looked similar and she had that weird reaction to seeing the cast. So now we're getting into Maury territory.
Oh, seriously.
And here's the thing. Her son was a ballet dancer.
Oh, my gosh.
The calves. He also had some defining features in common with the man. An unusually shaped ear. How dare they?
Like, drag him.
I know.
Okay.
I'm like, wait. I'm next time I get my hair cut. I'm like, no, the hair can cover the ears. Thank you so much. And two missing incisor teeth.
Mm-hmm. I think also facially they maybe have looked similar. But also if you look at pictures of this man, he just looks like any.
I was going to say he looks just like a 45-year-old or like a 48-year-old man.
Yeah, like it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. The theory was Thompson was married to another guy and reacted so weirdly because she didn't want him to find out she had a relationship with the Somerton man. She was like, oh, she was balleting it. She was stepping out to do a little ballet.
Okay, I feel like I wrote that confusingly because I feel like the theory was maybe she was dating the man who then became her husband.
Oh, yeah. And then,
it doesn't really matter, but.
She didn't want to be like, she didn't want to be seen like, oh, that's my boy who I have a boy with.
Well, it's exactly. It's kind of like, you know, I don't want to have to run into any of my exes if I'm with my boyfriend. Like, that's just annoying and I don't want to deal with it. I also don't want to run into them at all, but
It's like,
but I'd rather be alone.
BL before Lou. She's like, that's not my life. No. So Robin died in 2009. But they were able to track down his granddaughter, which didn't match the Somerton man's DNA.
So that was a dead end.
Dead end. That's also, oh gosh, so he died in 2009. That's like young for him.
Right.
What's also weird is Abbott married the woman, the granddaughter, a day after meeting her.
I read that and I was like, what the fuck? I assume they had been corresponding, but I'm like, what?
I still don't know what, you know what?
This is like, is this Married at First Sight? Like, what is going on?
Married at First Sight murder investigation? That is going to be a show, I feel like, in 5 years.
Ooh.
So, yeah, just to reiterate, the professor investigating this married the granddaughter he tracked for DNA a day after meeting her.
So weird.
So bizarre. But they were able to test for DNA, of course. And the man was revealed in the summer of 2022 to be...
Drumroll.
Carl Webb, an electrical engineer. So Sarah, ooh. Let's get into... Ooh. We finally have an identity of the person.
Collective gasp. So, who was Carl Webb? He was born in a suburb of Melbourne called Footscray in 1905. And... every time I read birth dates like that, it's always like, it's mind-blowing to me that people were born in like the early 1900s and also like the 2000s.
Right? I don't understand. Yeah.
It blows my mind. He was the sixth child of an Australian woman and a German man. He married a woman named Dorothy Jean Robertson in 1941. The marriage certificate listed her as 21 and him as 35 at the time of their marriage, which is a... slight yikes, my guy.
yeah.
What's even weirder is that there's no historical record of Webb post 1947.
Hmm.
And in fact, in October 1951, Dorothy put out an ad in the paper saying that she was divorcing Carl for desertion.
Oh, that's actually, I was going to say that's mess, but that's warranted. You know what? And bye. It's kind of like our... William, our director we did with Allie, like, hi, can I find you to divorce you?
Yeah, seriously. And by then, she had moved from Melbourne to a town 89 miles from Adelaide. And so, I mean, that's kind of far. But so the theory is like, well, maybe he found out that she'd moved and like went to Adelaide to try to find her and then ended up on this beach. Some other connections... because he had that book of Persian poetry. Webb did like poetry, and he also liked betting on horses. So they were like, well, maybe that string of letters really wasn't some mysterious Russian spy code. It was just his horses that he was betting on. And then, here's the big thing. They found out that he had a brother-in-law named Thomas Keene. So the like letter. The T Keene that was in all the clothes.
I mean, that really does connect a lot of dots.
It does connect a lot of dots. And now, to be clear, Australian police have not confirmed Webb is the Somerton man. They're running their own tests. And I checked up, even though I'm like, it's been a year.
It's been a literal year.
It can't take that long to test DNA. But they haven't confirmed it. This is just Derek Abbott's kind of like theory. We also really still don't know what happened or how he died or like why.
So by closure, we mean we have a potential name. But also a kind of concrete theory.
That's nothing. I mean, yeah. I don't think he was a Russian spy. I think we can kind of cross that one.
And I don't think he was a ballerina.
I don't think so.
But I guess an electrical engineer, like, are you doing a lot of like lifting up or I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I have no fucking clue. Maybe he just liked to run, you know?
That's true. Or never skipped leg
day. Just a runner. Yeah. He never skipped a leg day.
God bless.
But so we don't really know a lot, but Carolyn Billsborough, who did a documentary on this case, believes it was a suicide and said that this book of poetry, the Rubaiyat, was known as a kind of suicide handbook.
Ooh.
So, I mean, you could take her word for it. I don't really know. And it's another theory that was put forth is that it's possible he died of positional asphyxia, which is like when you pass out in a position that restricts your breathing. And honestly, like, as kind of commonplace and like not flashy as that is, I feel like I could totally see that. Like maybe he just was super drunk and passed out in like a bad position and suffocated. I feel like it happens to people.
I was going to say that is a thing that I more often than not, or like not constantly, but you hear like a thing like that, or someone like chokes on vomit when they're sleeping, unfortunately, when they're drunk or something scary like that. So I really could see it being that. I didn't like dive deep into her theory about what the book entails, but I think it might just be something as one of those like as simple as moments.
Yeah, I kind of think so. I mean, I don't know. There's also like just, I Googled blood in the stomach and there's so many diseases that can cause it. So just like, who knows? Maybe it was just natural causes and it looked super mysterious, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, I definitely don't think it's anything as wild as people were really running with it. Although I get why they ran with it, because it's pretty weird.
Yeah. And it's like, also we're like, oh yeah, like so the Russian ballerina spy appeared and had a relationship with this nurse. And the nurse was in another relationship, so didn't want to talk about this relationship. And boom, 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 boom.
And she possibly lied about knowing this man.
Yeah. Well, Abbott got a hopefully lovely life with his new wife out of this. So I guess there's that. And some more closure. I mean, we'll see if they give us DNA answers. I kind of am assuming the DNA will be in the favor of this.
Yeah, I mean, we'll keep an eye on it. And I'm also like, how long does it take to run DNA? Because I need to know about that Madeline McCann girl. So
wait, yeah.
We got to put a rush on this stat.
We need, like, is there like a pay extra for shipping? Like, guys.
Seriously, I'll rush ship it. What is it, $30? Just kidding.
I will rush ship it. Well, the one thing we know we will get answered today is who wins trivia?
Okay, so as we've learned this episode, although beaches can be lovely and relaxing, they're also pretty dangerous places. I mean, you could die from positional asphyxia. Isn't that crazy?
Ugh, yeah.
You don't even have to be on a beach to do that.
No.
That's true. So today we're going to play a game called A Million Ways to Die on a Beach.
Oh my God.
Wait, that's go like that through. TikTok sound that's like, dumb ways to die.
Yep. So we're going to go through the dark side of paradise today by seeing which of these is the likelier way of dying at a beach while you're enjoying some Bahama Mamas.
Ooh.
So like statistically?
Statistically, exactly. So
got it.
I'm going to name two ways you could die on a beach, and it's going to be your job to tell me which of the two is likelier to happen.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
These are based on number of deaths per year in the U.S. specifically. And you're both going to guess on each of these.
Oh, perfect. Okay, beaches do freak me out, so.
I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot of ways you could die on a beach. I was looking at this. You know, we have them as like the ultimate, you know, symbol of relaxation station, but it's dangerous out
there. Well, also, I know, like,
it's also too much work to get there.
It is a lot of work.
To avoid, like, sun poisoning. Like, I don't actually really like the beach that much. Like, I'm a pool person.
I'm Irish. I sunburn on the drive to the beach. Like, I literally got sunburned in a car. So, yeah, I don't go that often.
I grew up on a tropical island, so I went to the beach a lot, but I did have some very near-death misses, a couple of times. So
what?
Yeah. Let's get into it. I'll pepper in
some
stories
as we go through.
What happened
to you and how statistically likely?
Okay, so first off, let's start with some classics. Are you more likely to die from drowning or heat stroke at the beach?
Do we both guess?
Yeah, we both
guess. You both guess. Let's take turns guessing first so you don't copy each other. So, Danny, you guess first this time.
I kind of want to say heat stroke.
Okay.
That works because I think drowning.
Perfect. Well, we got a split vote here, and the correct answer is drowning.
Oh.
Woo. I feel like you die of heat stroke, like, after.
Well, that's what I was saying, because, like, heat stroke could... that's why I was thinking, because I was like, oh, it could happen, like, the next day with a heat stroke. Mm.
Well, the thing with heat stroke, too, is that it's very clear when you're getting heat stroke. So you have a little bit more time to react to it. So a lot of people are hospitalized from heat stroke, but only about 1,300 actually die from heat stroke a year.
How many die of drowning?
4,000.
Holy shit.
It's very common.
Wait, did you ever get heat stroke? Yeah.
Not heat stroke, but I did almost drown three times.
Jorge, we got to get you some swimming lessons.
Yes. Oh my God, or some floaties.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
I need Jorge in a little tubie.
When you're young, like growing up in a tropical island where the drinking age is 18, it's just like, it's just madness.
Yeah.
You go to the beach and do all sorts of silly things and mix things that you shouldn't mix.
Mm-hmm.
I see it
now. Yeah. Thankfully, I was rescued a couple of times and I was able to fend for myself the other one. But,
Jeez.
I also found out it only takes about 40 seconds for an adult to drown on average, which is way shorter than I thought.
I'm never going in the water again.
Never. I'm nervous to take a bath
only
now.
Only showers.
Yeah.
Hot tub.
I can buy myself showers, but you can't overheat. Yes.
Well, hot tubs, I was just in one and I felt like, you know, everybody loves to drink in the hot tub and I get it, but I get so tired immediately that I'm like.
Also, there is a moment when like you're in a hot tub with people and I'm like, oh, we're like in like soup together. I like it ruins like the vibe gets off so quickly once you think about it a little too much.
They're like, this is Armie Hammer's dream.
Oh my God. All right. Well, Sarah, you are on the board early. Ooh. 1 point for you, Danny. You're still waiting for the first.
Okay.
There's plenty of chances here. All right. Next up, collapsing sand holes or sharks.
What? Those are a thing?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm.
How are you more likely
I'm
to die?
I'm immediately going collapsing sand hole.
Okay.
I kind of want to go with that too.
Well, you're both correct. That is correct. So, collapsing sand holes are responsible for about 5 deaths a year.
That's not that many.
Which is crazy. 87% of these deaths are men. So, this is why women live longer than men.
Because, like, why are men jumping on holes?
Is it just like kids who, like, or not kids, but just like when you dig in the beach, you know? When you dig
a
hole?
Yeah. So, it is unfortunately mostly kids as well, which is sad. But it's actually kind of terrifying. So you dig a hole, and then if you go sort of sideways, you kind of like make a little cave for yourself.
Yeah.
And then it just collapses over you because it's just sand. And when it collapses, it's really hard for people to know that it even happened because it kind of like erases all evidence that there was even a hole. So it makes rescuing you incredibly hard because no one notices. No one can hear you scream.
Oh, my God.
And then no one knows where you were because there's no hole anymore.
The fuck? Okay, so well, I'm glad that I've never had the idea to, like, crawl in a hole that I've dug at the beach. You just dig a hole, like, for fun.
I would take, my thing was, like, I would take a bucket and, like, make little sandcastles and that was it.
Yeah.
That's very safe. You can't die from that.
Or I would, like, you dig until you hit the water. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, and then I made filtration. Because isn't it a thing that like people always are so afraid of sharks, but like they never like really kill people?
They don't.
Yeah, that's true. Only about one person a year dies from sharks. Yeah.
Damn.
There are shark attacks and you can get seriously injured. But in terms of death, it's very rare. So in 2022, only one woman died when she was swimming off the coast of Kewapa Point in Hawaii on December 8th. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She disappeared without a trace. She was swimming with her husband, and she suddenly like disappeared. It's kind of like terrifying, but
well, this sounds like a Netflix documentary. And then he was accused of the murder.
Yeah, I was going to say,
and then they figured out it was a shark.
Except when it was a shark.
Wow.
All right, so 2 points, one for each of you.
Woo.
Sarah is still leading by one.
Okay.
Next up, boat explosions.
What?
Or riptides?
Ooh, riptides are freaky.
I'm going to go with the riptides.
I'm doing that too.
Damn.
Incorrect.
Oh. What?
Boat explosions are actually... Wait. No, you're right. You're both right. It is riptides.
I was like, what is riptides? I was like, what are we not seeing on Below Deck?
Like, I was going to say, I've never heard of a boat explosion.
So riptides account for about 100 deaths a year. And this is... It's a terrifying experience.
How is
this
that different than drowning? I'm not trying to split hairs.
No, you're right. You're right. It is very similar. Like, riptides lead to you drowning. But drowning in general is higher than just riptides.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it's super terrifying to be, like, caught in one of these and you're trying to swim against it. It's awful. Boat explosions. I didn't even realize this was a whole category of beach-related deaths.
Mine either.
But about 10 people a year die from these explosions, and it often happens when a boat is getting refueled.
Ugh.
So refueling can lead to like a boat exploding.
Yikes!
While it's on a dock. Yeah, so about 250 boats explode a year.
Holy
jeez!
It's not very famous. It's only about 10. Actual deaths, I know, right?
Yeah.
All right.
We need to
Sarah
redo how
is
we
still
feel.
Leading by 1 point.
Ooh.
Next up, we have two more categories.
Okay.
All right. Another boat-related one, which is capsizing or diving accidents.
Oh,
which
shit.
Which is the likelier way to die?
I have a visceral reaction to diving, so I'm going to do that.
Honestly, okay. Same, because I think of all the the signs that are like, don't dive in 3 feet water, you're going to hit your head and die. So I'm going with diving, too.
This is more of like scuba diving, specifically. Oh, scuba diving. Not necessarily like diving, like jumping off.
So what are the choices again?
Scuba diving or boats capsizing.
Oh, I guess I'll change to capsizing.
Capsizing, okay. Danny, do you stick by your earlier answer?
No, I'm going to stick with diving.
Good switch, Sarah. It is capsizing.
Oh.
Yep. Diving accounts for about 80 deaths a year, and this is due to multiple reasons, including decompression sickness, which is when you, the bends, basically, when you go up too fast and then your blood boils.
That can kill you?
Yeah.
I'm never scuba diving.
Dude. Nope.
I think what the scientific explanation is, like, your blood, you had so much pressure on it, and if you go up too quickly, your blood literally boils because the pressure makes the boiling temperature go down as you go up.
Oh, my God.
The way I'm never leaving my couch, like, what?
Seriously. I I'm not afraid of, like, the ocean, but, like, the deep ocean, I'm already afraid of it. So that scuba diving is a no.
I'm always like, because people like play in the ocean. I'm like, the ocean's not to be played with. It's stronger than us.
Ways to die while diving is insufficient gas, so you literally run out of oxygen.
Shit.
While in the deep blue sea, entrapment, so you get stuck in a cave and you can't get out or something.
Okay, stop. That's enough.
Or equipment problems, which could be any number of things.
No.
But capsizing is the bigger killer. It's about 260 deaths a year.
What kind of boat?
So a big concern, and this is more of a recent concern, is tourist boat rides where you're on a small boat, like doing a sunset cruise or whatever. And then all of the people on the boat go to one side to take a selfie and immediately capsize the boat because the weight distribution
is
completely off.
Not Instagram and America's obesity problem really coming together on that.
Yeah, rearing its ugly head. But yeah. Careful on boats, guys. Shit. Selfies can kill.
And the people that fall while hiking doing that, it's really so scary.
I know. Oh. All right. Well, Sarah, you have a 2-point lead, so you have won this game. But let's play the last question just for fun. Fishing. So this is mostly commercial fishing, just so you get an idea of it.
What does that mean?
Like when people go, do you remember that that show Deadliest Catch?
Oh, yeah. When you're like on a motorboat.
Crab fishing.
Okay.
Oh.
Widely considered to be pretty dangerous, or jellyfish stings.
I was hoping this one's going to come up.
I feel fishing.
I don't really feel like jellyfish stings are deadly, but I'm going to go with it anyway just for fun.
Danny, you are correct. It is fishing.
Nice.
So fishing related deaths account for about 58 deaths a year, which doesn't seem that high,
that's
but it's about
zero.
28 times higher than any other industry. It is the deadliest industry that you could work in, commercial fishing.
Oh, is that why it's called the deadliest catch?
Yeah, because people die doing it.
Wait,
yeah.
How many people die?
58 a year. This is in the U.S.
Oh, wait, that's not so that could many. Be more how is that the deadliest the industry?
Well, how many people die doing what we do?
Yeah, how many podcasters die a year?
I mean, we just die later from being sedentary all the time. But
that's
like,
true.
Yeah. I guess dying
but I'm like,
on
construction
the job.
Isn't more deadly. Like, you know what I mean?
Or mining, yeah. Huh.
I guess what I'm wondering. Maybe with mining, too, is the type of thing that you die years later from, you know, black lung or whatever.
Yeah,
as in the Zoolander.
Yeah.
I've got the black lung. But fishing, you die on the job. Like, you die getting hit by a wave while you're getting a cage or something. It's pretty dangerous out there.
Dang. What if your job is scuba diving? Then you're good at it.
That's true.
That's true.
Then you're good at it. Then you don't die.
Jellyfish stings account about 40 deaths a year, specifically from box jellyfish.
Oh, it's kind of close.
Which is, yeah, it's pretty close. Pretty close. But box jellyfish are kind of widely known to be the deadliest fish, like the deadliest sea creature.
Huh.
It's not sharks, it's not whales, it's not like sea urchins, it's box jellyfish. So careful for jellyfish.
Okay.
I'm Googling
but
them.
Sarah, you have won A Million Ways to Die on a Beach.
Great.
Well done.
And my prize is an all expense paid trip to the beach. Just kidding.
Well, I was gonna say you are going to LA, so you'll be in LA, so you will be.
Yes, but it's gonna be fucking cold, so I'm not even going to the beach.
Oh, that's too bad.
I know. Oh, I want my money back.
Yeah, truly.
Woo! But thank you, Jorge. This was a fun Absolutely. And terrifying game.
Yeah, I know. She's really changing relaxation.
Stick to the pools. That's what I always say.
Yes, I agree with that. And also let us know, because this case gave us some closure. If you guys are looking for some more closure cases, let me and Sarah know in the Facebook group, Not in the True Crime group. Also, we are still loving our Smithsonian era TBT one. So if you guys are still enjoying those, let us know. Also, let us know on the rate, review, and subscribe. If you leave a little review, let us know a case you want us to cover, something like that. That's always a fun little treat for all of us.
Yeah, or just put it in the Facebook group, Not Another True Crime group. We have a lot of ways to contact us. Maybe we should just streamline to one, but that's okay. I do love the group.
Yeah, because there's a little something for everybody. If someone is like, oh, yes. I'm not on Facebook, if someone's like, I don't have Apple or podcast, oh, I don't do Instagram, but yeah, there's something everywhere.
It's true. You can DM it to us at Not Another True Crime on Instagram. I read those messages. It's a fun time. Or you can DM it to me personally, Sarah Lameem.
Or me at Cash Regina, Cash with a K.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Levine and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at NATC Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to natc@betches.com. Betches.